is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
The headlines: the World Trade Organization warns of a risk of several key economies sliding into recession, just as the inflation rate in the UK sets another record. Western officials confirm the missile that struck Poland's territory was in fact fired by Ukrainian air defense. And Donald Trump officially launches his presidential campaign with a promise to make sure Biden won't get another 4 years in office. Hello and welcome, everybody. Our top story for this half hour: the World Trade Organization is raising the alarm about several major economies heading into recession.
It may not happen everywhere, but I think that in several key countries, we risk, sliding into a recession. And of course, the impact of that can be quite significant, even for emerging markets and poor countries.
Speaking on the sidelines of the G20 summit, Iowala also said that the war in Ukraine, the cost of living crisis, and soaring inflation are among the uncertainties that cloud the prospect of a global recovery. Last month, the organization projected global trade to rise just 1% in 2023, down sharply from a 3.5% forecast for this year. Most of the G20 leaders attending the two-day summit in Indonesia have slammed the war in Ukraine, saying it's hurting the global economy. Well, Britons are paying a lot more to heat up their homes and put food on the table this winter. The annual inflation is up to its highest level in more than 40 years amid a worsening cost of living crisis. According to the Office for National Statistics, the inflation rate reached 11.1% in October, up from 10.1% the previous month. Gas, electricity, and food prices made the largest contribution to the inflation rate. The increase is more than Britain's central bank had expected. The bank will now have to further raise interest rates to control soaring prices. Said Purazo is joining us now from the British capital, London. Said, it's great to have you with us. The annual inflation rate is at its highest level in more than 40 years. How worrying are these numbers?
They are indeed worrying, Bardia. If the trend continues, and it looks like it is, the UK is already being called the sick man of Europe, the situation where you both have industrial strife and rising prices or an inflation, both of which we have seen unfold over the past few months. This is a high street in West London. Walk into any of these shops here and you will come out having paid more than you did just a few months ago. The CPI, the Consumer Purchase Price Index, rather, it's at its highest, 1981, and also above the predictions, as you mentioned earlier, of the Bank of England, which increased the interest rate to 3% only over the past few days to, theoretically, in theory, to control inflation that is now at above 11%. The projected inflation rate is above 13%. Some people are even looking at more than that, like 20% over the next year or so. This is, of course, the recent increase in inflation that's been oscillating between above 10 and under 10% over the past few months has been, surprise, surprise, the increase in gas and electricity prices. Gas prices, for example, have gone up by 130% since last year, and electricity by more than 60%. Huge increase, really, to take place in only 1 year. Other contributors to the recent figure, food and non-alcoholic beverages price hikes. As far as food, it's been driven by cheese and milk, an increase of food inflation, as a matter of fact, at this point, is at more than 60%, more than 2 percentage points since last year. All of this happening on the eve of that coveted waiting that the whole country is waiting for, of the autumn budget by Jeremy Hunt, Chancellor, to happen sometime tomorrow. People are really holding their breath to see what is going to happen, but he has already given an indication, a warning, in other words, of what he called eye-wateringly difficult decisions to be made. We already know what that means. It's definitely going to mean government spending cuts as well as hiked, increased taxes. But how much tax is everybody going to pay? We had spoken of fair share of taxes to be paid by everybody, but will the big corporations be paying their fair share as the rest of the country does? So we'll really have to wait and see. As far as spending cuts, which public sector will have to find what they call efficiencies or ways of cutting down on their expenses so they can plug that huge black hole that has been caused, made in the government's budget as a result of that catastrophic mini budget by former Prime Minister Liz Truss. So it's going to be a very difficult winter, no doubt, for many of the people here, especially the poor who are already having to pay more for energy and also for food. And in the case of millions of people who are having to choose between eating and heating their homes. And Bardia, this is only the early days. It's still very mild here, as you can see from the skies behind me. It's still not very cold at all. But in when the coldest months hit, that is when you're really going to see the real impact of the energy price hikes and of inflation and everything else, the central to which has always been the energy price hikes, not to mention Brexit, that has also really contributed to the situation that the UK is in. Of course, it's really far worse than some of the other comparable advanced economies. The UK, of course, experiencing this because of Brexit, because of that cataclysmic decision by Liz Truss and the so-called mini budget, the ripple effects of which will be felt by everybody across the country and for this economy for the years to come. The Bank of England, of course, speaking of recession and the World Trade Organization's warning, the Bank of England seems to have suggested that the UK is already in recession. And of course, recession happens when you have 2-3 month negative growth or shrinking of the economy. We've seen a quarter of that happening. And it looks like the UK is bound to experience a further shrinking of its economy. Shallow but prolonged recession starting at the end of this year, Marty.
All right, thanks a lot, Tag Pureza, joining us from the British capital, London. And Poland raises its military readiness after a projectile landing in one of its eastern villages kills 2 people near the border with Ukraine. The Polish government says the explosion was most probably caused by a Russian-made missile. It has summoned Russia's ambassador to Warsaw for an explanation. As for the source of the missile, U.S. President Joe Biden has said that the projectile is unlikely to have been fired by Moscow itself. Meanwhile, U.S. media have been citing American officials who ruled out any Russian involvement. They say the missile that hit Poland was in fact launched by Ukrainian forces to intercept a Russian missile. Belgium has echoed a similar view. The Ukrainian president, however, has been quick to put the blame on the Kremlin. Volodymyr Zelensky says the blast was an attempt by Moscow to spread terror.
Firing missiles at NATO territory is a Russian attack on collective security. This is a very significant escalation. We must act. I want to say now to all our Polish brothers and sisters, free people will not be broken by terror.
NATO has held an emergency meeting on the missile blast in Poland. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres has also weighed in, saying that it's essential to stay away from any escalation in the war in Ukraine. Other countries, including France and China, have encouraged a cautious approach towards the matter. Turkey has said Russia had nothing to do with the strike. Moscow itself has denied any involvement, saying that images show that a Ukrainian S-300 missile hit Poland. Former U.S. President Donald Trump is once again back in the race for the White House in the 2024 elections.
In order to make America great and glorious again, I am tonight announcing my candidacy for President of the United States.
During his speech, Donald Trump also vowed to prevent President Joe Biden from becoming president for a second term. In the midterm elections last week, the elections failed to obtain the anticipated red wave of victories. They failed to win the Senate, but are still on track to win control of the House. Biden has reacted to the news by saying Trump has failed America. Trump is entering the race for presidency when he's facing trouble on several fronts, such as the attack on the Capitol building by his supporters in January 2021, as well as the removal of classified documents from the White House. He's called the investigations politically motivated and denies any wrongdoing.
Including the raid of a very beautiful house.
Ex-President Donald Trump has announced his candidacy for the 2024 presidential race. Since his ouster in the controversial 2020 election, polls have shown Trump as the runaway favorite to be the next Republican nominee, with Florida Governor Ron DeSantis his only and distant competitor. Head-to-head polls show that a vote between Trump and current President Joe Biden would be too close to call. While many Republicans are pleased that he's back, Trump's many passionate opponents are just as displeased.
The Republican Party has become a hotbed of fascism in the United States. The Democratic Party, they enable it, and, you know, they're not innocent here, but the fact that Trump is running again, to us, I think spells the need to really buckle down in the streets, to draw ranks, to get ready for more struggle.
Trump's return seems to cement the Republican Party's division into pro- and anti-Trump factions. Almost all of the Republicans who voted for Trump's impeachment were defeated in Republican primaries or have left office. Trump endorsed over 250 candidates in last week's midterm elections, and they won 82% of them.
When you have Donald Trump, who went from being a complete political outsider to now being the political poll within the Republican Party, where he, it's his blessing to state and local politicians who are running for office is now the deciding factor of whether or not they get party support, is troubling.
Now that Trump is officially the opposition party's frontrunner, many wonder if the Democratic Party will be forced to end their many investigations and court cases against Trump in order to avoid accusations that they are politically motivated and aim to influence the 2024 election. The final votes are still not tallied, but the Republicans appear to have gained control of the House of Representatives. However, their poor showing overall has the party in self-doubt, and the return of Trump only increases the nation's political turmoil and divisions. Ramin Mazahari, Chicago.
Iran says a diplomatic channel is the best way to resolve misunderstandings with Azerbaijan. Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdollahian made the remarks during a phone conversation with his Azeri counterpart Jehun Bayramov. He was referring to recent comments by Azerbaijan's president about Azeri-speaking Iranians. Amir Abdollahian expressed discontent with President Ilham Aliyev's comments. The Iranian diplomat said, respecting the sovereignty and territorial integrity of other countries must be a basic principle for any nation. For his part, Bayramov described as positive talks and contacts between Iranian and Azeri officials. He said Baku is ready to boost relations with Tehran in an effort to settle differences. The European Union has imposed fresh sanctions on Iran over its response to the recent riots in the country. An EU statement said 29 individuals and three organizations have been targeted over what it called Tehran's widespread use of force against peaceful protesters. Interior Minister Ahmad Vahidi, as well as several military and police officials, were on the sanctions list. Press TV is one of the three entities blacklisted. The sanctions include travel bans and asset freezes. Iran has strongly criticized the sanctions. It called the EU move unfounded, illegal, and meddlesome.
On Monday, the European Union announced new sanctions on a number of Iranian officials and three organizations, including Iran's 24-hour English news channel Press TV, for alleged crackdown on protests which began following the death of Mahsa Amini, a young Iranian woman who collapsed in police custody and was pronounced dead a few days later at hospital. The state broadcaster is accused of airing, quote, forced confessions of detainees, according to an EU statement. A baseless claim that has surprised Press TV staff and managers, as no such forced confessions have been produced or broadcast by the English-language news channel during the recent riots. On the contrary, the news channel has made a great effort to counter fake narratives fostered by Western media.
They make claims about Press TV producing and airing forced confessions. I've been working here at Press TV for almost a decade now, and I can tell you that Press TV has not aired any confessions whatsoever, forced or unforced. So that shows you how such decisions by the EU and the like are based on unfounded claims with no basis in reality. You know, I see this as part of their hybrid warfare against Iran. If you look at the big picture, you see them supporting terrorist groups. And these sanctions on Press TV I see as part of the media war and their narrative control. They want to present the war with their distorted version of what's going on in Iran these days. And seemingly they don't feel much comfortable with Press TV challenging their narrative. So they would try everything to silence us or make us less heard. But we're not going to be silenced.
Riots broke out in Iran in mid-September after the death of Mahsa Amini. Rioters brutally attacked security officers and caused massive damage to public property. Iran's intelligence ministry has revealed that the United States and the United Kingdom were directly involved in the unrest, adding that dozens of terrorists affiliated with the Israeli regime and anti-revolution groups have also been detained in the unrest. Experts believe that sanctions imposed on Press TV by the EU and earlier by the government of Canada are aimed at muzzling free speech and alternative views. And once again, the term human rights violations has turned into a tool for Western countries to advance their own agenda, as street riots in Iran don't seem to be achieving the goals they expected. Taking into consideration all the different aspects, Press TV is not discouraged by the unfair treatment and false accusations.
Despite all obstacles, Press TV will continue to be the voice of the voiceless, reporting underreported stories and news overlooked by mainstream media. Gisum Shahmadi, Tehran.
That's a wrap for now.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم.
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel.
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی.
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
Faith and Selective Duty, Monday the 6th of Ramadan, 1394, the 23rd of September, 1974. There is a well-known tradition from Imam Baqir alayhi salam, which appears at the beginning of the chapter on enjoining the good and forbidding the evil, Al-Amr bil-Ma'roof wa-Nahi anil-Munkar, in the book Al-Kafi, one of our most important works of hadith. There is also Al-Wafi by Fayl Kashani, which combines traditions from our major collections of hadith, and I believe the aforementioned tradition also appears at the beginning of its chapter on this topic. This tradition says that, as we have mentioned, there are people who pray and fast so long as it's easy and doesn't cost them anything, but who avoid the duty of enjoining good and forbidding evil because it is difficult and liable to cause them hardship or bring them harm. The Imam does not say these people are not believers or that they do not have faith. He does not say they are sinners or hypocrites. However, the Quran is clear about this. Those who are after their own interests and do not really want the religion in its totality, they are not believers.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
These are the people who, when they are in the right on an issue, go to the Prophet to seek his judgment. But when they are in the wrong, and they know that the Prophet will rule against them in his judgment, they do not go to him. The Quran asks, are they afraid? Are they in doubt? Have they some misgivings about the truth of this religion? Or do they have doubts or fear that Allah and his Apostle will be unjust to them? The Quran, Surah 24, verse 50. This is close to disbelief. Do they fear that Allah and His Messenger would mistreat them? In all issues, in all disputes, in all the ups and downs of daily life, a believing person is moral. They are not only moral when it suits them to be. As everyone knows, when Muawiyah ibn Abu Sufyan needed to, he brought pages of the Quran and had them raised on spears. When it suited him, he would talk about the Quran, prayer, and the religion. When he wanted to win over someone who was on Ali's side, he would even mention the virtues of the Commander of the Faithful. He would even shed crocodile tears as he recited these. You have heard this story countless times. Muawiyah was sitting, Abdullah ibn Abbas was sitting, others were sitting also. He asked someone, "O so and so, what do you know of Ali's merits?" They would ask, "Do you promise me safety?" He says, "Yes, you're safe." Then he began to praise Ali, and, as he did, Muawiyah would begin to shed tears. When he needed to, he would speak of his love for Ali. When he needed to, he would portray himself as a devoted servant of Allah. When he was forced to, in order to govern the masses of Muslims, he would respect their feelings. He would not want to offend their sentiments. He would speak of things that the people cherish, that is the Quran and Islam.
That you've done for me through all my years I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope.
wildfires in Greece, Turkey, the United States.
Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails continue to engage in hunger strikes.
Kim Yo-jong, the powerful sister of North Korean leader.
On the news line.
On Friday, French President Emmanuel Macron held a meeting with a number of U.S.-based anti-Iran figures at the Élysée. Among them, Masih Alinejad, who has for years led an anti-Iran campaign from the U.S. In the meeting, Macron described the recent riots in Iran as a revolution. Tehran strongly condemned the meeting, with the foreign ministry slamming it as a flagrant violation of France's international responsibilities in the fight against terrorism and violence. Iran's foreign ministry spokesman Nasser Kanani dismissed Macron's praise for an anti-Iran activist as regrettable and shameful. Kanani said it's surprising that the president of a country that advocates freedom would degrade himself by meeting a dissident who has tried to spread hatred and carry out violent and terrorist acts both inside Iran and against Iran's diplomatic missions abroad. Western media tried to portray Masih Alinejad as an activist. Reviewing Alinejad's social media posts, one would notice that much of her online activity revolves around the campaign through which she calls on her followers inside Iran to go on the streets, do something to provoke a reaction, record it, and then send the video file to her for online posting. She calls the campaign My Camera is My Weapon, a campaign hoping to achieve polarization, confrontation, and hatred in Iranian society. She's on the U.S. government payroll. Between 2015 and 2022, the U.S. Agency for Global Media paid Alinejad over $628,000 to use her show to push Iranian women into challenging Iranian laws, while also demanding more sanctions against her country. She has been living in the U.S. for the past decade, working as a full-timer for Voice of America Persian, a media outlet directly funded by the U.S. government, made to capitalize on harmful narratives in favor of Washington's interests. It is interesting but not surprising to see Alinejad being hosted in Élysée Palace by French President Macron, who supported a law in his own country to criminalize the filming and dissemination of images showing the face or other identifying characteristics of a member of the National Police, the so-called Global Security Law, with imprisonment of up to 1 year and a fine of up to €45,000 for the offenders. The meeting with Macron was not the first of its kind. In 2019, Alinejad met Mike Pompeo, then U.S. Secretary of State, a hawkish politician with this mindset.
I was the CIA director. We lied, we cheated, we stole. It's like we had entire training courses.
In 2018, Alinejad also joyfully met Madeleine Albright, the former Secretary of State, whose hawkish mindset saw the U.S. sanctions killing of 500,000 Iraqi children as a price worth it.
We have heard that 500,000 children have died. I mean, that's more children than died in Hiroshima. And you know, is the price worth it?
I think this is a very hard choice, but we think the price is worth it.
Albright died earlier this year, but the brutal imperialist mindset is still alive and kicking, with the likes of Alinejad advocating for more economic terrorism. The organizer of the meeting between Alinejad and Macron is the New York-based Justice for Kurds group. The co-founders of this organization are Thomas S. Kaplan and Bernard Henry Levy. In Justice for Kurds, they are pursuing the goal of forming the state of Kurdistan, which is the result of the division of Iran, Iraq, Syria, and Turkey. Levy and Kaplan are both linked to the American hawkish group United Against Nuclear Iran, which pressured pharmaceutical firms to stop selling drugs to Iran amid a massive coronavirus outbreak in the country. Levy is a member, while Kaplan is one of the main funders of the group. Levy and Kaplan have lobbied for the interests of Saudi Arabia and the UAE to sanction Iran. Also, in 2019, a report revealed that Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates had paid over $35 million to the UANI and its sister organization, the Counter-Extremism Project, over 2 years. In addition to Kaplan, Sheldon Adelson is one of the top donors to UANI. Reports show that Kaplan and Adelson accounted for over three-quarters of the group's total revenue for 2013. The UANI is one of the organizations that Tehran imposed sanctions on in late October for committing human rights violations, interfering in Iran's internal affairs, instigating violence and riots in the country, encouraging acts of terror, countering Tehran's moves and attempts to fight terrorism, and mounting pressure on the Iranian nation amounting to economic terrorism.
Bahrain has held its general elections. The regime was delighted. Authorities in the Sunni-ruled state, which crushed a 2011 anti-government uprising, said that the vote was free and put the turnout at 73%. But the vote was anything but free and fair. Rights groups called the voting environment of what is supposed to be a democratic process as political repression. They said there were highly restrictive measures that barred members of banned opposition groups. They added holding this general election will not address the atmosphere of repression and the denial of human rights that has gripped Bahrain for years. This in essence would make the vote a sham, that it would be void of holding any value. It was no surprise that Bahrainis took to the streets to protest the electoral process and announced that they would boycott the election since it served the political trajectory of the ruling class. Bahrain experienced an uprising in 2011, still ongoing till this day, in which the Bahraini regime dissolved the main opposition groups and cracked down on dissent. The regime's crackdown over the past 12 years has been brutal. According to a 61-page report, the court is satisfied with the confession. Bahrain death sentences follow torture, sham trials. The regime has arbitrarily arrested more than 20,000 and tortured more than 6,000 victims. This also includes extrajudicial killings of more than 200 and political death sentences, the dissolution of opposition political societies, and the demolition of 38 mosques. And this is happening in a Persian Gulf country that is a key ally of the U.S. in the region, home to the U.S.'s Navy's Fifth Fleet, and also the United Kingdom, which opened a permanent military base in 2018. Powerful Shia cleric Sharif al-Qassam has said that the election means normalization. He said the elections constitute a test of the populace's awareness, explaining that to elect means opening the door for Bahraini citizenship-bearing Israelis to vote for parliament members. This would translate into how the electorate, meaning soldiers, dual citizens, security forces, those with personal interests in mind, and normalization advocates, would create a parliament for the government and not the people. The double standard approach by the UK and the US stands out when it comes to the issue of human rights and Bahrain. After all, Bahraini courts have convicted and sentenced defendants to death following manifestly unfair trials, based solely or primarily on confessions, allegedly coerced through torture and ill-treatment. The governments of the US and the UK, as well as the European Union and its member states, should urge Bahrain, through both public and diplomatic channels, to halt all executions, and to seriously investigate torture allegations and violations of the right to a fair trial. Yet they have chosen to do that with other countries, for example Iran, which ironically has rioters out on the streets, endangering Iran's national security. According to Iran's intelligence minister, both the US and the UK even have a hand in the deadly protests, like to the CIA. A recent visit of the Pope to Bahrain pose an opportunity for the plight of Bahrainis to be addressed. 130 human rights organizations appealed to the Pope of the Vatican to demand the release of prisoners of conscience in Bahrain. They asked him to adopt an initiative urging the Bahraini authorities to end violations. But those hopes are dim. These 130 human rights organizations have cited how so many Bahrainis have faced discrimination, jail time, and torture. Yet Bahrain has always shifted the blame to Iran for the unrest. Could 130 human rights organizations be wrong, or for them to be lying? But Bahrain ultimately cannot have a democratic process because its big brother Saudi Arabia, which is just a stone's throw away, will be threatened by democracy taking place next door and will vehemently reject this, since it cannot risk having democracy creep into the kingdom. After all, Bahrain is joined only by a causeway to Saudi Arabia.
Hossein Amir Abdullahian warns of negative consequences if the UNHRC were to go ahead with demands of the West. He criticized the Western double standards when it comes to the issue of human rights. In a phone call with UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres, he said, "Contrary to the UN Charter, few Western countries exploited the peaceful demands in Iran and encouraged violence and offered tutorials on building weapons and Molotov cocktails on media and social networks, which led to the killing of police and insecurity in Iran." He says that if a session is to be held on the riots in Iran, it should in fact probe into foreign governments' role in encouraging violence and terror and not on the country that is a true defender of human rights. What Amir Abdullahian is referring to is the piling evidence of actual foreign involvement in the riots, perhaps the most compelling of which was revealed through a joint statement by Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps and the Ministry of Intelligence. In it, the country's two top intelligence bodies pointed out the major role of foreign intelligence agencies, especially the CIA, in orchestrating the riots. They revealed that they have gone as far as dividing the riots in different stages of pre-unrest, during unrest, and post-unrest. Perhaps the primary way foreign governments, especially the US, UK, and Saudi Arabia, were involved was through supporting foreign Farsi-speaking media that played on people's emotions over a tragic death and capitalized on existing grievances to attempt to overthrow the Islamic establishment through something like a coup d'etat. Iran has warned the UK of consequences for hosting the so-called Iran International Channel, which Iran has recognized as a terrorist organization. Iran also warned Germany for voicing its support for the rioters and calling on the EU to implement more sanctions against Iran. Amir Saeed Iravani, Iran's permanent representative to the United Nations, responded to the US cries of women's rights and human rights being violated in Iran and its calls for a special session to, quote, highlight the ongoing repression of women and girls and members of religious and ethnic minority groups by saying this: "The United States lacks the political, moral, and legal qualifications to hold such a meeting, distorting the very basic principles of human rights." He also added, "The US has no true and genuine concern about the human rights situation in Iran or elsewhere." Perhaps he was referring to the role that the US has been playing in destabilizing the West Asia region and carrying out terrorist attacks there. Yemen, Syria, Afghanistan, and Libya, and its unwavering support for Israeli crimes against Palestinians, don't even begin to tell the whole story on US's destabilizing acts in the region. The UK's involvement in Syria, funding terrorist groups, and being one of the coalition members of the fight against Yemen also nullifies their cries over human rights violations anywhere in the world.
As the war drags on in Ukraine, the gloomy economic outlook continues to trigger protests across Europe. Demonstrators in several European countries have hit the streets for pay rises and better working conditions. In the UK, tens of thousands of nurses will go on a strike for the first time, demanding better pay as the cost of living soars. The industrial action would begin before the end of the year, after the first vote on strike action in its 106-year-old history. Unions say that the salaries of nurses have dropped by up to 20% in real terms over the last 10 years. That has left members struggling to feed their families and to pay their bills. Hundreds of workers at London's Heathrow Airport will walk out in the run-up to the Soccer World Cup this month over demands for better pay. These 700 workers will strike for 3 days starting from November 18th. In Greece, workers have held a 24-hour general strike, which has seen thousands of protesters march to the streets of Athens and the northern city of Thessaloniki. Clashes also erupted between protesters and police forces, and the French capital, Paris. Commuters have faced transport delays. As metro workers called a major one-day pay strike, unions have staged strikes across several sectors in recent weeks, seeking pay hikes or increased hiring, as spiraling energy costs feed into widespread inflation. The protests come amid a gloomy outlook in Europe as Russia's war in Ukraine takes a rising toll on Europe's economies. The International Monetary Fund has predicted that Europe's advanced economies will grow by just 0.6% next year. It also says that this winter, more than half of the countries in the euro area will experience technical recessions. Germany, which is considered EU's biggest economy, is also expected to go into a recession in the next year.
The German economy has been built on cheap energy, cheap gas from Russia. And this business model is over. So Germany has to fasten to produce renewable energy and then go back on track with its business model. But this will take a couple of years.
Technically, a recession means that at least two consecutive quarters of shrinking output will occur. Next year, Europe's output and income will be nearly half a trillion euros lower as compared to the IMF's pre-war forecasts.
We have downgraded three times since October last year our growth projections. Last time we brought 22 to 3.2% growth, and for 23 projections was 2.9%. We will see, we always come around the annual meetings with our World Economic Outlook, that we are further downgrading our growth projections for next year.
The Eurozone has been battling against surging inflation for about a year. Inflation hit a historic high of 10.7% last month. Given the historic levels of inflation, the European Central Bank has announced three rate hikes this year, bringing the main rate from negative territory to 1.5% currently. Soaring costs with energy have been the main driver of higher inflation across the Eurozone.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Imam Ali alayhi salatu wasalam, the reason we love him as our hero, or not only in the material sense, in the spiritual sense, in the leadership sense.
لا يقيم أمر الله سبحانه إلا من لا يصانع ولا يضارع ولا يتبع المطامع.
I would like to take this opportunity to talk about one dimension of the personality of Amir al-Mu'mineen.
As-salamu alayka ya Amin Allah fi ardi.
Peace be upon you, O trusted guardian, appointed by Allah.
The universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam in To My Brother.
Imam Ali alayhi salam, the most distinguished and extraordinary personality in Islam after the Holy Prophet Muhammad. His entire life is a struggle for the advancement of Islam, the universal religion prescribed by Allah for all of humanity. Imam Ali alayhi salam was the living miracle raised up by the Holy Prophet Muhammad himself, and was not only the successor and the executor of the Holy Prophet Muhammad, but as history testifies, he was also a great human being, a brave defender of Islam, a just and fair judge, a generous philanthropist, a champion of the people, and the most pious person of his time. And in today's world, overcome by evil and darkness, and oppression and slavery, and tyranny and falsehood, a quick look into this beacon of truth and justice, a look into the universal persona of Imam Ali, is greatly useful for making and changing our lives, our families, our societies, and our world into the beautiful world that Allah has planned for humanity.
تبقى عيني بدمع مشتاقيا قد لسعت حية الهوى كبدي فلا تبي ولها ولا راغي.
What non-Muslims say about Ali, the first successor of Prophet Muhammad.
Robert Duray Osborne, 1835 to 1889, Major of the Bengal Staff Corps, says the following about Imam Ali in his book, Islam Under the Arabs, page 120. With him perished the truest hearted and best Muslim of whom Muhammadan history had preserved the remembrance.
Welcome back, dear friends. It's great to have you with us. This is IRIB English Radio. The program is To My Brother, and we are discussing the universal persona of Imam Ali, the son of Abu Talib, alayhi salam. So, dear friends, we are talking about the beautiful persona of Imam Ali, alayhi salam, this persona which has been able to transcend both time, place, and era. And this persona, of course, who was sourced and connected to the Almighty Allah as he was the first divinely appointed Imam. And of course, this persona which was the manifestation and the embodiment of the true teachings of the pure Muhammadan Islam, the teachings of the Quran, and the teachings of the Messenger of Allah, sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi wa sallam. Now, one of the things that we see in the persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam is this idea of living a simple lifestyle. Now, this is something in today's day and age which is rarely seen. Most of the people are so engulfed in consumerism and materialism, and they have become this integral part of this machinery of capitalism and this incessant and continuous idea of buying as much as we can, and in many cases, I mean, not even living within our means. A lot of people have to take out credit, and that credit incurs an interest upon it, and then you become debt slaves. Now, what's interesting is all of this kind of, all of these problems, such as debt slavery, or this incessant addiction to be continuously buying, or to become a cog in this wicked machinery of capitalism, all of these are sourced in what? They are sourced in this idea that we do not want to live a simple lifestyle. We want to live as luxurious as possible, you know, because as they say in the capitalistic, materialistic driven societies, you only have one life to live, so live to the fullest. Whereas in the Islamic model and in the Islamic teachings, the worldly life is just a means. And the worldly life is not the only life. The actual life and the real life, as the Holy Quran tells us, is the hereafter. It is the akhirah. It is the time after we die where eternity begins but never ends. And precisely we find that Imam Ali alayhi salam, during his own life, lived an incredibly simple lifestyle. Now, you might say, well, Imam Ali lived a simple lifestyle when he wasn't the caliph. But of course, when he gained power and position and a potentiality of gaining wealth, then he must have changed. Rather, we see that when Imam Ali alayhi salam became the caliph of the Muslims, it is the opposite. His simple lifestyle became much more severe, to the point where he told one of his companions that you cannot do what I am doing because it is so difficult to live that severity of a simple lifestyle that Imam Ali alayhi salam was living, eating an incredibly dry bread made of barley. So some of us might think, well, what does that mean? Well, not only was it dry, if it's dry, it's very hard to chew. And two, barley bread is not as sweet naturally as white bread, for example, or wheat bread is. Barley bread is a little bit bitter, it's a little bit sour. And so this is the lifestyle that Imam Ali alayhi salam lived. Now, this doesn't mean that we stop eating our regular food or we stop, you know, wearing clothes that are appropriate for our position and our status. Of course, within a average and mediocre means, you know. But it does mean that we need to think twice about what is extravagant in our life, what is a luxury in our life, and what is a need in our life. And we must make sure not to confuse a need with a luxury and a luxury with a need. And we really need to reflect and think about how we can live a simple lifestyle. And if we follow this very relatively simple prescription of the persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam, which is to lead and live a simple, humble, yet satisfied and contented life, I can guarantee you that we will be able to solve many, many of the problems that come about because of a materialistic, capitalistic, and consumeristic driven society, which many of us are faced with in the present day. A beautiful, profound, thought-provoking lesson brought to us by the universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam.
Assalamu alaikum to you, dear listeners of iRib English Radio, the program To My Brother. I'm Atta, the producer of this program, and at this moment, I invite you to listen to the Arabic text of Ziyara Aminullah along with the English translation. Please stay tuned.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم اللهم إن قلوب المخبتين إليك والها وسبل الراغبين إليك شارعا وعلى القاصدين
O Allah, verily the hearts of those who surrender to Thee are full of passionate love. The path of those who long for Thee is the straight, true road. The instructions given by those who lead on Thee are distinct and precise. The minds of those who are aware of Thy reality are filled with awe and reverence. The call of those who invite unto Thee is loud and clear, and the doors of approval are kept open for them. Whoso submits a supplication to Thee receives a favorable answer. Whoso turns repentant unto Thee gets acceptance and amnesty. Whoso bursts into tears in fear of Thy punishment obtains mercy. Whoso seeks redress from Thee finds the required assistance at his disposal. Whoso asks for Thy help, procures the aid as a gift. Thy promise made with Thy servants is fulfilled. Whoso asks for pardon of his errors finds them reduced to nothing. Whoso does everything for Thy sake discovers that each and every deed has been preserved. The means of livelihood available to the created being come from Thee like a rainfall, and in addition, many recurring favors and bounties reach them in regular succession. The sin of those who ask for forgiveness are overlooked. The wants and needs of all that which has been created by Thee are properly satisfied. Those who put forward genuine demands get more than they ask for, one after the other, again and again. For the hungry, wholesome food is arranged. For the thirsty, clean water is available in abundance.
Now we invite you to listen to Brother Hassanain Rajabali.
Why should we be proud? You will notice human nature is to worship heroes. Hero worship is common. People go to watch movies because they love to watch heroes. Comic book shops sell all those fantasy stories because we love to worship heroes. Hero worship is a natural phenomenon. But all of that is fantasy. It's not real. Such people don't exist. Superman doesn't exist. Spider-Man doesn't exist. They don't exist. And even if you're talking about great kings that came, they were false in many ways in their character. They were not good role models. But Imam Ali alayhi salatu wasalam, the one who dislodges such personalities, yet he was so humble. So humble, so down to earth that you and I need to follow. I'll give you a simple example. One example you find is, many a times you and I notice when we give charity with strings attached. And when we give it, we make people feel